I'm going to introduce, I've got Susie McIntyre right here on the phone with me, and I've got a few questions for her today, and she's going to share some of her music with us, some of her inspiration, encouragement with us today. Susie, how long have you been?
Hi, Cassie.
Hey, how are you?
Well, first of all, I mean, I've known you since you were a little bitty girl, so, I mean, I don't remember exactly when it was that we met for the first time at Bonita, Oklahoma, but it's been quite a while ago.
Yeah, I tried to count up today. I think I was probably about eighth grade, so it's been quite a while. So I was,
yeah.
I was.
You've always been a really good girl. Yeah, I know you kind of looked up to me. You know, you were excited about it when we would come to Bonita to the church, and it was always a good thing to be able to see you.
Well, thank you. You're definitely an encouragement to me. I've been telling everybody, you know, how I got to meet you and stuff, and I was telling them today, I was like, I'm nervous. Why am I nervous? I'm not a little kid anymore. And I told them, I said, I'll have to tell myself exactly what my mom said. I think I changed three or four outfits the day that Wade had asked me to come babysit. And my mom came upstairs. She goes, what are you doing? And I said, I don't know what to wear. She goes, girl, she puts her pants on the same way you do. She's not going to care what you wear. And, you know, I think we forget that, too. We forget that, you know, people that are in the ministry or artists or, you know, even actors and actresses, that they're human beings. And it's a good reminder to know that, you know, you, and I found you to be so personable from day one.
Well, I hope so. It is. People need to remember, it's what people do, that's just the job. Who they are is who they are inside, and how they react to people, how they love people, and how they love their own families. We just do a job, you
right.
know. We just sing, and we just do these things, and we're not any different than anybody else. We just have a different kind of job. And so, and then comes that responsibility to be a good steward of the position that we get to be in with other people, and to manage that position. You know, I read something on John Wayne last night out of the AARP magazine, and he went to take his young boy out of school. And when someone asked him, he said, why did you take your son out of school so he could travel with you? And he said, well, these kids leave their parents about 16 and 17, you know, because they're, you know, they're with their friends, and they're going here and there, and they can drive. He said, and then they come home about 30. He says, I want to love my kid today. I want to get to know him now. And so we all have that responsibility to take care of the people that we're around, and be good stewards of that. So that was a huge inspiration to me of what he said.
Yeah, that is very good and so true. I was going through my storage unit yesterday, and I came across the picture we took at the Women's Aglow Conference, and then I also found the autographed picture you did when I was in junior high. And I was actually telling the guy that I'm going to marry is Wyatt Nations, and I did some pictures of him and put his information on it, and he said, oh, that's silly. Those kids don't want my autograph. And I told him the story. I said, you know, that's not true. You wouldn't believe the impact it can have. And I, you know, I hung it in my locker all through high school, and I would be struggling, and I'd, you know, open the locker, and it would just remind me to do what was right that day. So, you know, I know you've touched lives from all the way from little kids all the way up to, you know, seniors. So it's...
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, you wanted to know a little bit about me and let your listeners know about me, and you asked me the question, how long have you been singing Christian and inspirational country music? Well, I don't know, maybe some of your listeners can't even remember 1984. Some of them weren't born there then, but I started singing Christian music in 1984. My husband at that time was a rodeo cowboy, and he had come home from a rodeo, and we weren't getting along very well. Abuse had started in my home and inside my marriage. My little boy was a year old, and so he got home about 5, and we decided to go to church, left the house about 9, and went to a little church down south of Atoka, Oklahoma, called Day Spring Church. It's no longer there now, but went in there, and God changed my life that day. I rededicated my life that evening when we went back, and I decided to sing for Him.
Wow. I'm so glad you did. Do you write any of your own? Oh, sorry. It's hard when you're not seeing somebody face-to-face, you end up interrupted. But do you write any of your own music?
I haven't. I did come upon an inspiration for a song when I was in my second separation from my husband. At that point, I was sitting at my computer one day and kind of thinking about the abuse and different types of abuse, and I just thought, Cassie, about verbal abuse, and the old adage, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me, came up through my mind. And I thought, what a bald-faced lie. That is so untrue, because it does hurt. It does hurt you inside. And I wrote that in my computer, typed it in, and then another phrase came to me almost immediately. It said, they cut just like a knife, but leave no scar that you can see. And so I had those two lines, and I sent them to my niece in Nashville, my brother Peg's daughter, Autumn, and she and another guy or two put a song together called Sticks and Stones, and it's on my Let Go album.
Yes, it's a powerful song, and it really touched my heart, because that's something that I've, you know, talked to people about, and even growing up, you know, working with different people, is the verbal abuse is something that people don't, you know, they can't see it, and so that song's very touching.
Right, right. There's so many different types of abuse. We were just in Utah this past weekend to do a benefit for the Dove Center, and it's a home, a shelter for abuse victims. And what I shared that night at the concert was that people can abuse from across the room. It doesn't have to be a slap or a hit or words. It can be a look and an attitude. Anytime a person is not taking care of another one's heart, it's abuse. So it's you can be abused in lots of different ways.
That's so true. When you were growing up, Susie, who would you say influenced you the most in, you know, your ministry, your music, and what you're doing now?
I would think it would be, my mother was a huge influence as far as music, because she taught us four kids to sing, especially Reba, Paik, and myself. Alice didn't show that much toward music as the rest of us did. Probably my mama, growing up in her house, we sang a lot, and that was a way for us to entertain ourselves, and she was a huge teacher of us. Another one would be my grandma. She inspired me to love God and to love the elderly and to love the hymns. And then a little farther on would be Reba. Reba has inspired me throughout my life to work hard, to improve, to be friendly to people, to, you know, she works not 24/7. I mean, it's just like she never quits working. And I'm a little bit different than that, but she just is respectful to people. And I think we all got that from our grandmother and our mom.
That's so great. And people, you know, like, they are more personable, and I think they connect with you when there's such humbleness and in both of your hearts. I can see it, you know, even through social media, you can tell when someone's humble and they're respectful of people and they have a heart for people.
No. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I love the song that you and John Blackwell recently recorded, Daddy's Hands. Would you mind sharing with us what that song means to you?
Well, my daddy passed away in October of 2014. He had a long stint of strokes and congestive heart failure. He was a rodeo cowboy, as you know, and then he was also a rancher, and him and mama raised us four kids here in southeastern Oklahoma, where both of them were raised. But my daddy was raised as an only child. His mama was the school teacher, and his daddy was a rodeo cowboy also. And they were poor, not many resources. His father didn't have the best father, and he wasn't the best father, my daddy didn't have the tools to be a daddy. He was raised by himself. He was raised around adults. But when he was a father, he hit a home run. And we could remember the times when he really endeared us to his heart. One time I won the spelling bee in the fourth grade. In the fourth through the eighth graders, it was the ones that I competed against. And I won the right to be able to go to Tulsa to the Tulsa Tribune spelling bee. And so that day I came home, and Mama must have told him. Well, Daddy was, when we would get home from school, he usually saved putting out hay till the afternoon, and none of us really wanted to go help him because he was a little picky the way that we drove the pickup. You know, don't hit a rock, and in this part of the country, you can't hardly help but hit a rock. And so we didn't want to help him. And so I went to the, I heard his pickup coming up the hill, and I went to the back porch and started a load of laundry. I don't think I had anything in the laundry, but I did. I'm busy, you know, and so maybe he won't call on me. And so Reba came to the door, the back porch door, and she said, Susie, I said, what? She said, Daddy wants you. I said, tell him I'm doing laundry. And she said, no, he wants to see you. And, Cassie, this really reminds me of Daddy's hands, because I went up to him, and he said, I heard you won the spelling bee. And I said, yeah. And he said, you did good. And he reached down in his pocket and pulled out a couple of dollars, I guess. I don't remember exactly how many. But as I watched those hands, that hand go down in his pocket and pull out that money, I knew it was to treat me well. And that was one of the things I'll always remember about him.
Wow, you got me tearing up over here. I love that.
It's not the big things that parents do. It's not the huge gifts, and it's not the meaningful words that we say to our kids. It's the time one-on-one, and, you know, it's just, he would take us up on top of the mountain, or the hill, we call them mountains here, but they're up on the hill and take us swimming, and, you know, after a really hard day's work, or he'd take us up to Kiowa to the Dairy King and get us a ice cream or a Coke, and, you know, and then he would bring us a watermelon when he came home from a rodeo, and it was just stuff like that we really remembered. Maybe they were so few and far between, I'm not sure, but we remembered we could count on those things from him.
Right, and those are such great memories to hold on to, and, you know, I was blessed to get to meet your parents, I believe in McAllister, and, you know, and your dad was just one of them strong, you know, original cowboys, so.
Uh-huh, he was. They don't make them like him anymore.
No. You know, we touched on how, you know, I've known you since junior high, and we've touched a little bit about your previous marriage and what you went through, and I know, you know, when we talked about abuse, people don't have a clue sometimes when people are going through that, and as a kid, you know, I had no idea, and as I grew older, I believe there was some kind of news article or something, I don't know what was published, but my mom contacted me to pray for you, and, you know, through the years, I read your book, you sent it to me when I was going through marriage problems, and I think it was Road to Home, is that the book?
A Tender Road Home.
Yes.
A Tender Road Home.
Yeah, and I read that, and I guess it really brought the reality home, you know, and then I watched as you tried your hardest to hold on and do what was right, but, you know, I watched as you struggled, and I watched as you overcome, and there's a lot of people out there that have gone or are going through the same thing you are and have. Could you give a little bit of advice for someone that might be in that situation or has been?
Well, first of all, I had a really strange ability to kind of forget things and sweep stuff under the rug. And then there's my kids who gave me the want to stay in the marriage. I wanted to have a father-mother marriage in my home, and so I put up with a whole lot. I stayed mainly because I knew it would be even worse in the divorce with three kids, because there would be shared custody, bickering, backbiting, you know, vying for positions, stuff like that. And I of all of us kids, I truly felt like my marriage could be saved. We went to counselors, we talked about it, we even wrote the book, Tender Road Home. But being in the ministry, I thought, wow, we can do this, you know. And then there's always this shame that you don't want your marriage to fail, and so you kind of cover it. You cover it up, and you, even though all the signs are there, people can see it. People can see the black eyes. People can see the tension between you and the tension in the kids. If you want to know what the house is like, just ask the kids. You know, they're liable to tell you the truth. But if someone's out there going through this, I would say the first time it happens and these signs of control and brutality and pickiness and these mind games start, first time it happens, check your heart